Good morning. Welcome to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. This spring, during Black Lives Matter protests, during the events that led to the riot in April and the frightening violence that has strafed some Baltimore neighborhoods since then, we thought often of the reporting we did 3 years ago in our effort to look deep into the roots of inequality in the Baltimore region. We called that year-long series The Lines Between Us. This morning, we're bringing you some of its episodes. In late 2012, we focused on the wealth gap, which has a big impact on which families get ahead and which families get stuck. Even more than income, wealth adds up all the financial assets families can use to get ahead. This spring, two public policy institutes reported that the typical Black family has just 6% of the wealth of the typical white household, about $7,000 saved up compared to $111,000 for a typical white family. The typical Latino household has just slightly more, a little over $8,000. Where does that wealth gap come from, and what does it mean in people's lives? We started with our then-senior producer, Lawrence Lanahan, who had the story of an 88-year-old African-American World War II veteran from West Baltimore.
This is a story about the American dream and how you reconcile that one dream with two Americas.
Tell me your name.
Isaac Joseph Bacon.
Joseph Bacon served in World War II.
I was in the European theater, and I came out looking for a job.
Back home, the massive Bethlehem steel plant at Sparrows Point was supporting the war effort. It would become the backbone of Baltimore's booming manufacturing economy. Bacon went there to find a job and noticed that Black men had the most dangerous work. They didn't hire him, he says, but he found work at the U.S. Public Health Hospital near Baltimore's Wyman Park.
He started in the kitchen. I was cook before I left.
Then he bought a home in a nice row house neighborhood, blocks from Baltimore's beautiful Druid Hill Park, for $6,300.
Yeah, in 1950, I moved up there.
Did the GI Bill help with that?
Yeah.
The GI Bill was starting to drive suburban development, but since he was Black, Joseph Bacon's options were limited to certain neighborhoods in the city.
But that's the only thing open during that time. There wasn't no places for me to live, you know.
Yet he was able to buy in a quote-unquote good neighborhood.
Yeah, because quite a few whites were still there.
Very few Black families had bought in the neighborhood by 1950, particularly on his street, Ruskin Avenue.
One family, and her name was Grace Grimes.
In 1954, Joseph Bacon married his wife Rosalyn at the house on Ruskin Avenue. So far, in a way, it's the American dream. Service in the European theater, a steady job with a pension, buying his first home, and getting married. Eventually, he paid the house off. But it was not an equal American dream. Just as the military he served with during World War II was segregated, so were the job and housing markets where he started his new life. And as he was trying to take control of his future with his job, a new home, and a marriage, things started changing around him. As more Black families moved into his neighborhood, white families moved out. By the time Joseph and Rosalyn got married in 1954, just 4 years after he bought the house, he's not sure any white families were left at all.
If it was, only a sprinkle of them.
A lot more changed over the next 50 years.
We are at my uncle's home. It's 2215 Ruskin Avenue.
Dominique Moore is Joseph Bacon's great-niece.
And one of the things that I hope you notice, these houses actually aren't bad houses, or they shouldn't have been bad houses. They're historical properties.
Dominique has fond memories of the house.
The way I'd like to describe my uncle is he's the reason why we all know Jesus. My great aunt and uncle did not have any children of their own, but they were the caretakers of all of their nieces and nephews and great nieces and nephews.
Uncle Joe would take them to church and Sunday school in the morning, and then back again for evening service. In between, they'd hang out at 2215 Ruskin Avenue. Just several blocks away, along the road that faces Druid Hill Park, many houses have been renovated.
You know what I mean? So that community or neighborhood is doing a little bit better, but you go one inch into the side streets and it's just the ghetto, short and simple.
In 2012, Joseph Bacon's neighborhood is peppered with police cameras and their telltale blinking blue lights. In a window across the street, a neighbor has a poster in the window for an outreach program called Operation Safe Streets. Stop shooting, the poster reads. Start living.
But back in 1950s, this was a huge accomplishment for my uncle, who was the first one in his family to purchase a home. It was a fabulous area. It was moving on up for them.
Uncle Joe and Aunt Rosalind would have been happy to stay in the house, even today. But then two things happened. The first was financial.
As my uncle, you know, moved on in his years, he refinanced the house without a lot of knowledge about what he was doing. And because I'm the lawyer in the family, I was called and said, we got a call from Uncle Joe that he owes money on the house.
A balloon payment had come due after 15 years of a home equity line of credit. Suddenly, Uncle Joe owed $16,000. Dominique refinanced that, along with some of his credit card debt, for a total of $30,000. A lot of dough, but with their pensions, Uncle Joe and Aunt Rosalind were able to make the monthly payments. Then the second problem came. A health problem.
Unfortunately, within 3 years of that, he got sick, and as a result of being in the hospital for 2 weeks at the Veterans Administration, he was no longer able to live on his own. And so he went from driving himself to the VA hospital to having to go to assisted living.
If he and Aunt Rosalind had stayed in the home, they could have continued making the $300 payments.
But assisted living is well over 10 times that a month, well over it, maybe 15 times that.
Uncle Joe and Aunt Rosalind left the house to go into assisted living a year ago. The bank has started the foreclosure process for the Ruskin Avenue home.
There's no value in this house, unfortunately. So normally an elderly person would be able to sell their home and take those earnings to supplement whatever retirement or Social Security that they have. But that's just not the case here. If anything, this house is a liability. The neighborhood is in such a decline that nobody in my family was willing to even live there for free, let alone pay $300 a month. It's a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house, nice architecture, but the neighborhood has just been like one of those neighborhoods that's just been left to fail.
Now it's a matter of getting the house off their hands at a price the bank will accept.
My uncle paid $6,000 for this house in 1950. We just received a short sale offer for $11,000 in 2012. That offer was rejected by the bank. I literally received an email yesterday for $20,000.
This has happened to elderly African Americans all over Baltimore. Many are stuck in their homes. Uncle Joe and Aunt Rosalind have been able to live in an assisted living setting out in a quiet part of Baltimore County.
Our family has to supplement my relatives' income so that we can afford to have them in a place where they can, you know, live comfortably. Luckily, he has family, and it's something to consider. God willing, we're all going to get old, and all our best plans can be undone by just getting sick. Luckily, my aunt and uncle both were federal employees and have pensions. But if you take those things away, you become a dependent of the state.
So for now, Uncle Joe and Aunt Rosalind are taken care of. Whether the house will be taken care of remains to be seen.
Because of the community, the only folks who are interested are investors, and investors want the cheapest house that they can get.
And as go the homes, so goes the community.
Maryland Morning's former senior producer, Lawrence Lanahan. On 88.1, we're listening back to an episode of our series about inequality, The Lines Between Us. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about how the wealth gap exacerbates race and class lines over time. As you heard in that story, Isaac Joseph Bacon, then 88, an African-American World War II veteran, had not accumulated enough wealth to take care of himself in his old age and ill health, even though he earned and received a federal pension and had been prudent about buying a house. In that piece, you heard Dominic Moore, Mr. Bacon's great niece. She's a lawyer and residential real estate developer in Baltimore. She told us this month that her Uncle Joe died about a year after we spoke with him, but not before selling that house on Ruskin Avenue, a couple blocks south of Mondawmin Mall, the house he bought on the GI Bill in 1950 for $6,300. She told us it sold for just $22,500. Back in November 2012, I asked Dominique Woods about the assets her Uncle Joe had, his pension, his VA health care, his family support, and asked her what happens to other elderly people in the neighborhood without those assets.
Well, this is very interesting, and it's an example of the law of unintended consequences, or the natural result of intended consequences. So value is determined by perception. basically. An appraiser comes in and assesses, well, what is the neighborhood like and what is a willing buyer desirous to pay to live here? And so all of those things come together to have a neighborhood go and start to decline in value. In addition to that, it's not just the perceptions of the outside community, oh, this is a Black neighborhood, so it can't be as valuable as other neighborhoods. It's also the perception of the people who are raised in that community. So now my Uncle Joe never had any children, but all of his sisters had 7 or more children. And in every instance, all of the children moved out into the counties. Now they're middle-class Black people, exactly what the city of Baltimore needs to maintain the tax base here. And our current mayor has a big move to get middle-class families back into the city now. But perception affects everybody. Black people can view a neighborhood, understand it's perceived negatively, understand that there are no services, understand that that the police patrol as opposed to protect. And so instead, they too vote with their dollars. And they vote to live somewhere where they feel appreciated. They feel like the neighborhood is nice. And then the cycle continues. It continues. And I think an example of that here is in the Owings Mills community. I went to high school in Owings Mills. I remember back when, it wasn't that long ago, but I do remember when Owings Mills was pretty much exclusively a white neighborhood, and all of the Black middle class families who have left the city, and people of my generation and my mother's generation, they've moved into those communities. And now you have a community like Owings Mills, which is mainly Black. Now, I don't know what the exact percentages are, but certainly there's a substantial Black population. And I think that's as policymakers view the consequences of decisions, it's something to be considered. Because if you redline a neighborhood in 1950, you'll still be feeling the consequences in 2012.
Dominic Moore is a Baltimore lawyer and real estate developer. We have resources about the wealth gap at linesbetweenus.org, as well as pictures and video from Uncle Joe's house. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cast. Later in the show, we'll have another story from the Lines Between Us of how the wealth gap affects families. Before that, after the news, we hear about some of the government's tools to chip away at entrenched inequality. Stay with us on 88.1.